This is an oral history interview with Jeff Halcombe. Interview is taking place on July 11th, 2017 for the Madison County Historical Archive. My name is Phil Schneider. I'll be conducting the interview. Jeff, can we start off with your full name?
Jeffrey R. Halcombe.
What's R stand for?
Ray.
Ray. So you've lived your entire life, or most of your life, in Madison County, correct?
Correct.
Tell us what it was like growing up in the county.
Well, I grew up on a farm, a 300-acre farm, about 10 miles outside of Edwardsville. So we had a pretty simple life. We raised our own livestock, had our own garden. My mom didn't work. My dad was a carpenter and he farmed. So we just basically lived off the land and that's, about what we did. We farmed and did what we could do to make ends meet. And that's what we did.
Okay. So I should ask this first, but what year were you born?
1960.
So you lived in what town as a kid? In Edwardsville, you said?
Edwardsville was my address.
Your address? But you lived
out in the country, out by Holiday Shores.
So you said your dad was a carpenter?
Carpenter by trade.
Uh-huh. So he'd get up and do, how did that work?
He'd get up and go and farm or go and work from 7 to 3:30. Then he would come home, get on the tractor, and go out and plow and disc and farm.
Wow.
And then my mom would take care of the livestock and the garden, and us kids would help with whatever they needed when we was able.
Okay. So there was a brother or sister?
I have one brother.
Okay. So what was it like then growing up as kids on the farm?
Well, we just had each other to play with because our nearest neighbor was a mile away. So we just played outside and did our jobs. And, it was really a pretty simple life. We didn't really have a whole lot, but we were happy because we lived off the land and we just did what we needed to do. And,
So you say live off the land, and beyond just farming, did you do a lot of fishing or hunting?
I didn't hunt myself. My family did. They deer hunted, but we raised our own garden, had our own garden for all of our own vegetables canned. Then we raised our own livestock, pigs and cattle, butchered all them. My mom had at one time cured her own meat even. Smoked our own hams and everything. We had a wood furnace in the house. We did not have, we didn't have air conditioning. We had a wood furnace. We cut wood every weekend. So that's how, what kept us going.
So it seems like a busy life.
It was kept us pretty busy. There was always something to do.
Mm-hmm. But as a kid, did you have time for fun?
Oh, yeah. I was always playing in the sand pile or building toy guns or playing army or mowing grass, whatever. My dad always had a list for me to do, but we enjoyed our life. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had a good life.
So you said that you had busy life on the farm, but you guys had fun. When you were in the summertime, did you have more chores to do or what?
Yeah, we'd paint buildings and stuff. And then when I was a little older, I worked with my dad on construction, doing gopher stuff, stripping forms, setting up forms, digging out basements, pouring concrete, pretty well whatever they needed, mm-hmm. needed done. And I made a little extra money. I think I made $2 an hour or something like that.
That would have been back in the 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably in the, probably like in the mid-70s.
So you'd go and you'd work a full day?
Yeah, yeah. I'd go to work with him, come home with him, yeah. Mm.
So do you think that's where, growing up on the farm and then working those kind of jobs early on, you learn how to be a hard worker?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, my whole family's always been that way. We always you know, work all day, and sometimes we never really went on vacation. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'd butcher 12 hogs, and we'd, you know, we just would all get in and do it. The whole family would do it. Our whole, you know, my mom's brothers and sisters, and mm-hmm. we'd all get together and do it and get it done, and everybody got something out of it. And that was because I never took a vacation until I was 18.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go?
Florida, which went with some of my friends, which I got really sick because I got really sunburned, and I would never do that again. But
was it an experience?
Yeah, it was an experience. Never been out of... Well, I think I was 16 when I went down to DeSoto, Missouri. Been to the Springfield Fair, DeSoto, Missouri, and then when I was 18, I went to Florida. But I had never been anywhere else. Hmm. No other state or anything.
Because you didn't have time?
Well, we just didn't have the money. We just didn't, you know, we didn't have any extra money. We just did, you know, well, we did what we could do. And
so were there a lot of farms in the county at the time?
Yeah, about everybody. You could have a small farm back then. Yeah, it ain't like the big farms now where everybody, one guy farms 30 or 40 different properties. You know, we had a small farm. It was a 300-acre farm, but 140 was tillable. My grandpa farmed 600 acres. And there was a lot of smaller farmers, you know, farm 200-300 acres. You could do it back then, but things have changed a lot.
Well, okay, that's a... Okay, so what's changed, or what caused things to change?
Well, everything, I guess, progress. We quit farming 30 years ago, and when we quit farming, they told us, we rented that farm, and they told us we were not progressive enough because we didn't have the large equipment to, you know, do 300-400 acres a day. Mm-hmm. You know, we just wasn't fast enough, and it's just, that's just the way it's gone with technology and everything. All the tractors and everything's gotten bigger, and the equipment's gotten bigger, and it's just spread out, and that's why a lot of the smaller farms folded up, because they just couldn't keep up with the, and then the cost of the machinery went up, and it just made everything more difficult. Yeah. You know,
did you when you went to, when you were in school, did you plan on continuing farming? Like, was that your plan?
No, I did not plan on it, because it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, you work a full-time job and then come home and go out and plow till 1 or 2 in the morning, and get back up and go to work again every day, and then you had to buy your machinery, and your seed corn, and your gasoline, and your diesel fuel for the tractors, and you know, and then like we had some bottom ground cleared, and then we would pick up that. We had that cleared. We started planting. Well, the first 2 years we lost all the crops because of the ground had not been farmed. It was timber ground. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, I just really couldn't even get anybody to buy the corn. It wasn't good.
Okay, I feel like we're jumping around a little bit, but let's talk about being a kid and going through school. What do you remember about going through school? We went to the Edwardsville School District?
Edwardsville School District. I mean, I had a learning disability, so Edwardsville was a good school to go to because they took care of the problem. But, I mean, I went to 3 different grade schools because I went to Morrow for 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Midway for 4th and 5th, and Hamel for 6th. And then I went to, to Edwardsville, to the junior high, and then to the senior high, mm-hmm. which is all changed now. Yeah. But
it definitely has.
It was pretty good. I mean, school was school was not easy for me, and I, being a farmer, I didn't really see that I needed all that higher education. You know, to me, it was just, you know, I liked to work with my hands, and as long as I was doing that, I didn't really, you know. But, I mean, it was pretty good. I mean, we had a good school district, and it seemed like that everything went pretty well. We always managed to make it work. I ended up graduating, so something to be said for that.
So as you were growing up, you know, teenager, I mean, I'm sure, you know, became apparent to the other folks around you, maybe had more money, you know, maybe a little more well off. So what did you and your brother do? Like, how did you guys enjoy yourselves as teenagers when some, like, the, you know, regular things like, you know, going off to the movies and spending a lot of money wasn't an option for you?
Didn't really. I mostly stayed at home and worked in my wood shop, and then I got involved in church, went to church, youth group and that. And just, you know, whenever I wasn't doing that, I mean, I was either helping my grandpa because he had a farm, or working on our farm, or, you know, trying to make a little extra money here or there.
Mm-hmm. What was it like going to church back in the late 70s, maybe early 80s?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I started going. I went to Sunday school as a child, and then my mom got sick for a while, so we quit going, and then I kind of got back once I started driving, started going back to church, and I enjoyed it. Got involved in the youth group and doing stuff, and I spent a lot of time at church, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good experience.
What are some of the things you guys would do?
Oh, the youth group, we'd go to Six Flags, and we had a stand at the Bethaldo Homecoming. You know, we'd go to concerts, Christian concerts, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever play any sports in high school or in?
No, I did not.
No,
not wasn't. I just never was that coordinated to do sports.
Did you ever do any like recreational sports, like with the church and whatnot?
I did church basketball at one time.
Oh yeah.
I tried church softball, but that didn't. I could do okay at basketball, but I couldn't do very good softball, so I didn't even mess with it.
Was it just you did basketball just for the fun of it, or did you enjoy the competition?
I just for the fun of it.
The fun of it.
I'm not a real competitive person.
Mm-hmm. So you knew you weren't going to go into farming,
right?
So what was your plan then, going into like at high school and after high school?
When I was in ninth grade, I decided I was going to be a machinist. And that's what I put my mind to. So that's what I became a machinist.
How did you decide that? Was that something you...
Well, I took a shop class, and then I liked it. And I'm mechanical, so I started reading all the books the teacher would sell me. He would sell me the old textbooks. And I'd read all about machine work. And I decided that in ninth grade, and then I took another more shop classes in 10th grade, and then I went to a vocational school in Collinsville for the last 2 years of my high school, and then I got a job as an apprentice machinist at a high school.
So what was your first job at then?
Madison at M&M Machine and Gear.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now... Soon after that, though, you ended up moving, didn't you, for a while?
Right. We had the big snow of 82, and it shut everything down. So after that, I was laid off. So I was working at gas stations and wherever I could find a job, and I had met my wife, and she's from Pennsylvania, so we ended up moving out there, and I got a job at a knitting mill, and then I got a job at a place that made automotive driveline parts, and then I got a job at an aluminum extrusion facility.
Sounds like, so were those just, you know, you laid off from a job, or you just find a better job?
Well, I started at a knitting mill driving fork truck, and then I found a better job And then I worked at that job, and then I had been trying to get in at the aluminum mill, mm-hmm. and then I finally got in there.
Okay.
So then I quit there to move back to Illinois and take a job at Granite City Steel.
So what was it like working at the, you know, the steel mill was a big part of, was and is, and keeps going back and forth, big part of Granite City. What was that like working there? It's such a volatile place.
Well, the place I was working in Pennsylvania, was a really nice shop. And then I interviewed at Granite City Steel, but I didn't tour the shop. And then when I, the first day I started, it was like stepping back in time to the 40s. Because they just weren't doing things, you know, very modern. Everything was antiquated and stuff like that. So that's what ended up, you know, but I fit in there, so I worked there for almost 12 years.
Did you ever get laid off while you were there?
Nope, never did. Okay. Not one time, because things were pretty good right then.
Mm-hmm. You said that the shop there was antiquated. Isn't there a reason why you think the one... is there any reason why you think that the shop here in Madison County would be antiquated compared to the one you experienced out in Pennsylvania?
Well, I guess it was just the way they had set it up and ran it for all them years, and the steel mill had a bonus system, and it was a really odd system the way they had things set up. And if you'd use smaller tooling to get a job done, then you would make more bonus. So the guys was always trying to invent ways to make more bonus, you know, to make more money. And it was just, I mean, it was standard machine equipment, but it was just not up to the standards that we had at the time. You know, it was all pretty far back to the 40s and 50s, you know, just like it was literally like walking back into a book.
What was it like working there? Like, walk me through it like a day at the steel mill.
Okay, you'd clock in, you know, go to the locker room, get changed in your work clothes. Then you'd get a job, just depended on, you know, sometimes they had emergency jobs they had to get, you had to get done. And sometimes you just had follow up on a job that was already in progress, or sometimes you get a new job, you'd have to get the print. They give you the print, you'd go find out how much material you needed, go out and saw it. And put it in a lathe or mill or whatever you had to do and machine it. And, you know, most of the time you would follow it through to the end. It just depended on the size of the job.
Mm-hmm. So you worked in the shop. So you were, so what was like your responsibility as far as the overall picture?
My responsibility was to make and fabricate crane axles, they had these things called crestong bits that they picked up those slabs with, bore crane wheels, bore locomotive wheels, make locomotive axles, bore couplings to go on the end of motors and shafts. It's a drive, a coupling would drive it, and it was set up so it'd be a little flexible, so in case it didn't match perfect. We machined these things called bottom rolls. They went into the galvanized line where they coated the galvanized material. And it was a big stainless steel roll that went down into the vat of molten zinc. And the sheet would run over around this, and that's how it would get coated,
mm-hmm.
with the galvanized. And we would work on them. Oh, just, you know, just everything. We did work on electrical motors. Just whatever they needed. Sometimes we'd go out in the field, work on stuff. Just depended on what they needed.
So you were like you didn't work on finished product. You worked on like support for the mill itself.
Yeah. We didn't work on the... We worked on the equipment that made the finished product.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so like, you know, we'd work whatever our capability was. Some of the stuff was too big for us, but most of the stuff, you know, like we would work on the overhead electric cranes. We'd work on those crane wheels or the blocks and tackles that were on them, the crane blocks or the drums, the electric motors for them, stuff like that. The fork trucks, we'd work on fork truck parts, stuff of that nature.
So what was like one of the biggest jobs you might have done there?
The biggest job I ever done there weighed 14 tons. It was a big bearing capsule for the hot strip.
Hmm. So how would you handle a job that big?
We had a 15 or 20. Yeah, we had a big crane. Hmm. We had a big overhead crane that you would handle it with.
Hmm.
Set it up on the boring mill with.
When you worked at the mill, when you came back to Illinois, the Grand City Steel Mill was it's behind the times. Do they ever update that at all? I mean, it's been years now.
Yeah, well, I was there. I just kept asking them to get some newer tooling and stuff of that nature. And we ended up getting a key seater, a newer key seater that was a lot better. A key seater cuts keyways and stuff, internal mm-hmm. keyways. And we got a boring mill, $500,000 boring mill, and new saws, a nice Bridgeport milling machine that had a digital readout on it. None of the lathes or anything had any kind of electronics on it, you know. Everything was still from the... All these lathes were from the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So what was the digital allowed you to kind of get more precise?
Yeah, more accuracy, mm-hmm. easier, you know.
Yeah. So how did you convince them to I mean, because you said before they had a bonus for using less tooling, you get more money, right?
Yeah. Well, what happened was they stopped that program, and they went to a fixed bonus. So it made it more fair that way. So then, since we had a fixed bonus, those guys wasn't pushing for that anymore. Mm-hmm. So that way it made it more fair. So then a lot of the old time guys still wouldn't use the digital readout. That they would refuse to do it because it was something new, you know, and they didn't want to do it. But
so they would either pass the job on to somebody else, or they'd
pass it on or just not use it, you know. Mm-hmm. Just do it the old way. Look at the count the dial revolutions and do it the old-fashioned way, like they've been doing it for 30 years, you know.
They contend it was better, or they just weren't comfortable
to do it, you know? Because when I hired in there, there was probably 8 guys that were headed to retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So then we got a new group of guys in, so everything was turning over, so it made it better for to get things updated and stuff mm-hmm. of that nature.
So how did you go about getting, it seems like you were the driving force behind getting new stuff?
Well, I was kind of just kept asking and telling them, well, if we had this, we could do this, you know, we could do this better, and we could get more jobs in, because a lot of the jobs at the steel mill would get contracted out. And we was always trying to fight to keep them in there so we would have more work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to do more work, you had to have more equipment. You had to have better equipment, you know,
mm-hmm.
to compete with the outside people.
Yeah.
So one time we did. We had a contest with Linhart Tool and Die and ourselves, and we beat Linhart.
So what was that contest like?
Well, it was a big job. It was a big slab of steel that started out... I think it was 8 inches thick, 3 foot wide, and we had to machine these slides out of it. And we ended up getting it done before Linhart.
Was that before the equipment upgrade or after?
That was after.
So when this was about what year?
Oh my, this was 99, probably 97,
96, 97. So the steel mill had already contracted the job out to them, and you were just wanted to do it to prove it to the bosses, or?
Well, yeah, we wanted to prove it that we could handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. We showed them that we could do it.
So you're just trying to fight to get more work, keep your
guys... It was a constant fight to keep work in the mill, because it would get jobbed out. Which Linhart Tool and Die is now out of business. Mm-hmm.
So you said, but like when you were there, the mill, like you never got laid off, but there was a kind of struggle to keep the work going.
Yeah, I mean, to keep it in house, to keep it, you know, because there was a lot of times they'd send the work out, and then they'd send it, it'd come back in, and it'd have to come back to our shop for us to remodify it because it wasn't right.
So they'd be paying the first contract, and then had to pay you guys to fix it.
Yeah.
So when you were working at the mill, you would come in. You said sometimes you get emergency jobs. What might an emergency job be?
Oh, if they had a crane down, that would be like in the hot strip or in the cold strip or something that had a bad coupling or a bad bearing box for the wheels or something like that, and they needed it in a hurry, you know. What would happen was is the bearings would go bad, and usually by the time they found out, there was nothing left. I mean, it was in bad shape. So, you know, the longer that stuff was down, then it was costing the steel mill quite a bit of money because of the time down, you know, shut the stuff down. They had, you know.
So your job was to keep the mill running, basically.
That was kind of, yeah, part of it, yeah.
Okay. So you worked there for 12 years.
Yeah.
Why did you leave?
Because I got a chance to go to work for a company called Dow Jones and Company. They print the Wall Street Journal as a machinist there, and I was going to make about $150 more a week. So that's why. And it was a good job. It was in air conditioning. The steel mill was not air conditioned. I worked straight afternoons. It was 115 in there in the summertime, so pretty hot.
Yeah. So okay, let's. So part of it is an increase in pay, better conditions. Was the steel mill all bad? Was there a positive experience working there?
Oh, it's a good place to work. It's a dangerous place to work. I worked in a shop, and a lot of the people worked out in the where the slabs are at and the coils and that is. When you would go out of the shop, boy, you had to really keep watching because there's them big haul trucks and everything. And, I mean, you could get run over real easy. I mean, they had machines that could pick 400 tons of slabs up at one time. That's a lot of weight. A lot of weight.
So you moved to your new job with better conditions, better pay. Did you like it better? Is it same thing? Is it a job?
I like it. It's a good job. I miss machining full time. This is more of a maintenance job where you repair and, you know, something breaks, you repair it. And machine goes down, you figure out why it went down, then you repair it. Ink line blows off or one of the ink pumps on the printing press goes bad. You repair that, and then sometimes you have other things. And we fabricate stuff, guards, shields, make stuff like that.
You now work in more of a maintenance-based job. Right. So what does your job entail now?
My job entails now is when I'm working afternoons, when we're printing the paper, to make sure the press stays running. Make sure the paper goes out the door. That's the main concern. Mm-hmm. Make sure that the equipment, if something breaks down, get it fixed so we can keep going. That is the main, what I do now. When I work days there, I maintain the equipment. I do preventative maintenance, grease bearings, lubricate stuff, change filters, stuff of that nature. Plus, also the department I'm in now also has buildings, so sometimes I have to do some building maintenance, plumbing, things of that nature, painting stuff, you know, take care of the water, air, ink, stuff like that.
So you went from the steel industry, which was doing okay when you left, but right. has since, you know, had some tough times, to the newspaper industry, which is now entering into some tough times.
Yeah.
What do you, like, what do you, why do you think that is? What do you think is affecting?
Well, everything's going digital. So that is why they thought, they've been pushing real hard to go digital, which they have gone a lot. But then they found out that a lot of people still want to read the paper. They want to hold the paper. They, you know, they don't want to look at it on a computer screen where they got to scroll every time they want to look at something instead of just opening the paper up and looking at the whole page, and they can see whatever they want to read and read it, you know. And right now, the paper revenue is greater than the internet revenue. So that's one of another one of the reasons. They've downsized a lot of things, but it's still, you know, the paper's still, we're still printing it, so that's the main thing. Hopefully I can retire from there with that.
I mean, how many years left do you have to go?
8 years.
8 years. So you've been there now, was it almost 12 years or 15 years?
17 years.
17 years, okay.
17 yeah, 17 years. Years into August.
So what have you noticed, like, in 17 years? You've worked there now more than you worked at the steel mill.
Right.
So what have you seen a change in the industry?
A lot more. The Wall Street Journal used to be just black and white, and they had what they call spot color, a few ads. But now they've got a lot more color, which generates them a lot more money because the color ads are more money. So that is one of the things, because we put in a lot more bigger printing presses with more color capability to be able to print that color. So we can print more color than most of the newspapers in the general area.
So do you only print the journal at your press?
Right. Right now we print the journal and the Barron's. Okay. The Barron's is a weekly financial publication.
So in your life, you went from working on a farm to you being in, like, the heart of industry, and to where now you've got more of a, I mean, it's still, you work with your hands, but it's a lot more of a, like, a kind of a polished job. What are your, when you look back at, like, your working career, what do you miss? What have you learned? Look at the state of the steel mill industry now. What are your thoughts about?
I think it's a shame. I do not agree with the politics of some of the things that happened in the past, you know, because I'm not a big proponent of greenhouse stuff. So I really don't think that, I think the earth, everything revolves, you know, and it changes after a while. It changes and it just repeats itself. And I think that them closing down the steel mill and getting all this foreign stuff in is really bad. But I know that the company I worked for was National Steel. And then right after I left, it went bankrupt and U.S. Steel bought it.
What year was that?
I left in 99, and I think U.S. Steel took it over in 2001. And they changed things a whole lot. U.S. Steel is like one of the biggest steel companies in the United States, maybe the world. But they change things a lot. But I know that it seems like the steel industries, the whole time I worked there, you know, it's like it was a struggle. They was always having a struggle making money. But I don't know, you know. The Granite City division always made money. It was the other two divisions in Indiana and up north that kind of drug us down. Mm. That's one thing I will say about any place I ever worked in Madison County. They're hardworking people. They are good. Most of them have a good work ethic, and they can get the job done. You know, we always had a really good result at Granite City Steel.
So if you were, and we talk about your career line. We can switch to like your personal life. So you left for Pennsylvania because you got married. That's where your wife was from, mm-hmm. right? And then you guys came back. You came back with one kid?
Child. Uh-huh. Yeah, one child.
So you came back and you went back to the steel mill, right?
Right.
So what was it like working? And your dad, you said, worked a full time job and farmed, mm-hmm. and now you're working a full time job. You're working is it 8 hour or 10 hour shifts at the steel mill?
Oh, it would. Most of the time I worked 8. Sometimes mm-hmm. I worked 16. It just depended.
So you had one kid when you came back, and then soon thereafter you had two more.
Right.
So what was it like then? When you switched jobs to the work at the press, right? So you had better hours and stuff. Was it better for your family?
Well, kind of it was, but the only bad thing about working at Grand State Steel was I worked straight after. Is either work straight afternoons or midnights.
Oh.
And I didn't like midnights, so I worked straight afternoons. So the only time I really seen the kids was on my days off or... if I'd get up before they'd leave, but yeah, I worked 4 to 12, so I didn't always see them before they went to school, you know. Mm-hmm. And, it's a little more difficult that way when you work shift work, but that's just that's part of the industry. The job I have now, I work days and afternoons, and all my kids are growing, so I don't see, I see them whenever they come over and that, but I don't, that's the only bad thing about industries, you got to work off shifts, so it makes it a little harder on your family. That's about it, on that.
And then you've had two pretty significant injuries, right? You had an eye injury. Was that soon after you came back to Illinois?
That was a couple years after I came back. I was actually helping my grandfather. We were... putting logs. He had a sawmill, and we were putting logs on a trailer and chaining them down, and the chain binder slipped and struck me in the eye. And,
mm-hmm. and were you off work for that for a while?
For 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And then you had an issue with, was it your foot, your ankle?
My left ankle, yeah. I had to have it fused.
Mm-hmm. And so for that one there, you were off work too, right?
Yeah, I was off work 9 months for that. It was pretty rough.
So what was it like then, because you seem like a pretty hardworking guy, you've worked your whole life. What was it like then to be off work for those extended periods of time?
Well, I'm very fortunate in the fact that the company I work for has short-term disability. So on the nine-month deal, I got paid for 26 weeks of the 9 months, and then I was just kind of toughing it out for the last, months. Mm-hmm. And then I finally got back to work. But it's tough when you don't, you don't have no income.
Yeah. Was your experience pretty normal? I mean, I'm sure met a lot of people. You've worked with a lot of people. Is that experience pretty normal to have that kind of safety net at your work, or?
No, I wouldn't say so. You mean as far as the short term?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the better jobs have it, but some places don't have it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it just depends, but I'm pretty fortunate to have that,
yeah.
When
you were at the mill, would you have had that?
Yeah, they had a, something on that order, but I can't remember exactly how long it was for. They had some form of short-term disability.
So then you've raised your kids in the same county, about a different school district, right?
Bethaldo, yeah.
Yeah. So how was that like? It's been many years in between there, but like you grew up in the county and you've raised your family in the county. Was that a conscious choice or just kind of happened that way?
Well, I wanted to stay around close to my mom and dad area. I mean, it just kind of happened that way. I thought about trying to get the kids in the Edwardsville School District, but it just didn't work out that way. I found a house in outside of Bethaldo, which is in Bethaldo School District. So that's what I ended up doing. Which all of my, two of the three kids didn't have any problems. But one of them, he, my boy, he had a little bit of trouble, but for the most part, it worked out pretty good. I mean, but the, I have two other girls, and they didn't have any trouble like my son had, but it worked out. I mean, we got it done, so they, it seems like it worked out okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, you know, the school's changed a lot since you went through? Oh, like, is it?
Oh yeah.
And how have they changed?
Well, the the schools, all the schools, have got away from the more of the blue collar stuff, and they're leaning towards, you know, the more of the white collar stuff. But you have to have blue collar. I mean, because a computer can't fix everything. A computer can't fix itself if it physically breaks down. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you got to have the blue collar stuff, which the school stopped doing that kind of stuff. And it's kind of, I think it's bad. I think our country is in a shortage right now with that stuff. And, you know, I think that is one of the things that has changed a lot since I was there. And I wish they would reinstate it, but I don't know, you know, what'll happen there.
Because your whole career launched off of your shop classes, right?
Yeah. My senior year, I only had, my senior year, my whole time I was in shop, except for one half semester, which was consumer economics. Mm-hmm. I had to take that. But the rest of the time, it was shop classes, and I was also a shop assistant for the mm-hmm. teacher. They had a program where you get a credit for helping the teacher with the other kids. So I did that for my junior and senior years. I did that for two teachers.
Hmm. And you graduated back in
1978.
Okay. And so your kids went to school in like what decade, roughly?
Boy, you asked me hard question. Well, what, in the 2000s?
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
So about 20, almost, you know, 25 year gap there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you think that you observe that they've shifted away from like a shop and you know trade based classes, and they've switched more to more like, you know, the higher ed stuff.
Yeah, computer stuff, and mm-hmm. which a lot, you know, most everything's computerized now, but still got to have some mechanical stuff in mm-hmm. there. I mean, I think it would be a good option for people to have, if, you know, not everybody's a computer genius, you know.
So you've raised your kids in the county, and now your kids raising grandkids in the county.
Right.
Do you, see how much it's changed so far? Do you, I mean, well, looking back, do you think it's a good place to keep raising family?
I think it's a good area. I like Madison County. I mean, I grew up here, and it seems to be like a pretty stable place to raise people. There's not a lot of crime, and it's a good area. It's a big area, but I think that it would, you know, it's a great place to raise kids because, you know, everything's pretty laid back and not a lot of crime or anything. I mean, you're going to have that in some respects everywhere, but, you know, not like it is over in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. So, aside from like from work and family, you've been a part of the community for like a long time. You've been particularly involved with the Bethalto Homecoming. What part have you played in that?
Our church started back in, man, it's over 30 years. We started making ice cream. And they started out, it was making it from scratch. And then they started out, and then we got a chance to buy some 5-gallon ice cream mixers from Meadowbrook Fire Department. We bought them. We started doing it that way. And we just been selling homemade ice cream and cobbler up at the Bethalto Homecoming for 30-some years. And me and my wife were a big part of that for a long time.
So being part of that, like that one event, you know, year after year, you've kind of, you could kind of watch that whole thing kind of change and evolve. Like, what are some of your earliest memories of the homecoming?
Oh, back when I was 18, we would go up there and I can't even remember what we were selling, but I mean, things have changed a lot. There used to be a lot more crafts and stuff up there, you know, and stuff like that, you know, more like homemade stuff. You could go and demonstrations of different things, wood splitters and just pots and pans and just all kinds of things, where all that's kind of phased out now and it's all just mostly food stands and the carnival stuff. Mm-hmm. And just a celebration for people to get together from what they started years ago. Mm-hmm.
So you guys make, it's a homemade ice cream?
Well, by law, you can't make it anymore, you know. So we buy the mix from Perry Farms and we make it in the 5-gallon ice cream mixers. And then we pre-make it and then we freeze it and then we serve it up there. And then we buy cobblers and make them as, you know, because of Madison County Health Code. And bake them, and then we serve them with the ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's it's a homemade process, ice
yeah,
cream.
Yeah, right.
Is that an important thing, that kind of that old-fashioned feel to it?
I think it does. People love it. They come back up there for it, just for that. You know, it brings back old times, you know, of what people used to do. Because some kids nowadays have never seen an ice cream mixer. They don't even know how the salt and ice reaction works to make ice cream.
How does that work?
Well, when you put salt on ice, it lowers the temperature to 19 degrees. They're giving you a quicker freezing action than if you just used regular ice in the mixer. It makes a salt water solution. And it freezes the ice cream quicker.
Now these mixers you guys use, what kind of, are these just standard mixers or are these something special?
Well, they're kind of special because they're White Mountain 5-gallon. I estimate that the original ones were probably 40 or 50 years old, maybe older. They're quite large and they're quite expensive to buy a new one now, so if you're going to buy a new one, you can lay out some money.
And these are hand-powered? How are they operated?
They are motorized. They've been motorized. You can crank them by hand if you have the willpower to, but that's... We have motors on them, motors and gearboxes, and then that way it gets things going a lot, because we make 250 gallons, so that's quite a bit of hand cranking.
No, they came that way, or did you have to?
They came motorized, and I've just modified them some. Mm-hmm.
So that's where your machining comes into play, even though you don't do that at your job now. You're still machining.
Yeah, I have equipment at home that I can use to modify stuff or fabricate whatever I want, mostly.
So what are your biggest memories of just life here? Like, you know, if you were to talk about living in the county to someone who's never been here, what are the biggest things that stand out to you?
Oh, it's just a nice area to live. It's farmland, most of it, you know, nice little towns. It's flat out here, that's for sure, after living in Pennsylvania, man. I didn't think it was very flat out here in Illinois until I went out there, and then I realized you can see where you're going here, where you can out there. But, you know, they have the fairs and the things like that, and they're always enjoyable to go to, and I like to go to the tractor shows and stuff like that. Just a nice area to live in, I think. And I don't really, I mean, that's, I grew up here and I just liked living here. I mean, that's, I moved to the house I grew up in when I was 6 months old. So I had lived there 20, well, I lived there 18 years, and then we moved off the farm when I was like 18 or 19, and then we moved across the road and built the house over there. But it's always been, you know, a pretty good place. So I always enjoyed Madison County.
So you mentioned earlier that a lot of people here are, they're hardworking people. How do you think those people have responded to crisis in the past? Like, I think like the flood of
93. It just seemed like they really pulled together and took care of each other. I mean, I was fortunate. I didn't have anything that, I didn't live in a flood zone, so I didn't have to worry about it. But a lot of the people that did, they seemed like they helped each other, and the people, they're resilient. After a flood, they seem like they clean it up and rebuild it and get back to it until we have the next one.
So you, now that you're, you know, an adult, you've got a little more money in your pocket. What are the things you have done for fun since, you know, leaving the farm behind? You've got a little more space.
Oh, we travel. Me and my wife's from Pennsylvania, so we travel there once a year, or at least maybe twice, or up to Maine. We enjoy that. Work in my shop. I have a wood shop, metal shop. I enjoy that. And then, of course, the grandkids. We have grandkids, and we love them, and try to spend time with them when we can.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember your own grandparents?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep, I sure do. My one grandfather lived till he was 94. He didn't retire from farming until he was 85. And they were all wonderful people. And I can really say that I enjoyed them quite a bit.
So your one grandfather was a farmer. What was your other grandfather? What was his job?
He was a millwright.
What's that?
A millwright is like a machinist makes a part and a millwright puts them together.
Oh, okay.
Or there's different classes of millwrights. There's some that do like work on bridges, put in pilings, and they do a lot. A millwright's a very diverse person. Mm. So they do a lot of stuff like that.
So he lived here in the county as well?
He actually lived up in Jersey County, I think. I think he lived right over the border. Mm-hmm.
So he had more of a technical job, and your other grandfather lived nearby. He was the grandfather. You'd help on his farm?
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, the farm life, I mean, you know, they had 40 milk cows, 2,000 chickens, 600 acres they farmed, so they were quite busy.
Hmm. That was your dad's dad?
Pardon?
No, I'm sorry, that was your dad's dad?
No, it was my mother's dad.
Oh, your mother's dad, okay.
Yeah, you know, because you got to milk cows twice a day, and you got to gather eggs from chickens twice a day, so mm-hmm. It can be quite taxing, you know.
Did they have any help, or was it all just the family?
It was just my grandfather and his son, and then my grandpa's son-in-laws and the grandkids would help mm-hmm. when they needed extra.
So what happened to the, when he retired from farming, did someone else take it over?
Yeah, he had rented the farm for 45 years. And one of the big farmers, when my grandpa retired, then one of the big farmers took it over.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't own his own farm, he rented it.
He rented it also. Well, the terms that we had, like on our farm, it was a 300 acre farm, it was $250 a year and a third of the crop. That was to live in the house and farm the land, mm-hmm. you know. I was like a sharecropper almost.
Yeah.
Which nowadays is totally unheard. You know, you wouldn't Nobody does that anymore, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. So was that, when you said that was you're living on the farm and you pay for that privilege with part of the crop, what would happen if you had a bad year?
Well, everybody lost out. Mm-hmm. On a sort of, I mean, most of the time it panned out, because you'd get 2/3, they'd get 1/3, and hopefully it worked out for you. But there was times that, like whenever we had the new bottom land, it didn't work out too good. So, that's just a year that they didn't make out so good.
Did you ever have any dealings with the owner of the land?
No, the people actually owned a whole parcel of property, mm-hmm. which is, I think, 600 acres. Mm-hmm. These people were wealthy, and they owned it. So they had, back in the day, they would come down and visit. But after they all got older, they had a bank man do it.
Mm. Okay. So you have to, would you literally give them the crop, or did you have to take it to market and sell it?
Well, you took it to market and sold it, and then they just got a check. Oh, okay. And sent it right to them.
Okay. Was that a nice way to live, you think? And was it a simple way to live, to pay your, to pay for it that way at the end of the year, or at the end of the harvest?
Yeah, I mean, that was, you just basically, $250 a year to live in the house, and then 1/3 of the crop off 140 acres. I mean, that's a great way to live, I think. I mean, compared to nowadays, it's really something.
So do you think, you had a busy childhood working on the farm, but do you think your life now is any less busy?
No, my life's more busy now because I got a regular day job and work off shifts and that. I mean, the farm life, it's a great life. You work hard, but then you also have slack time sometimes, in between crops and stuff like that you don't have to be, you got your daily chores if you got animals and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. where, when you got a regular everyday job, you got to go there 5 days a week mm-hmm. and do it. And so, I think it's a little busier. It's where the farm life, you do everything you do at a regular house, but then you'd have your animals to take care of and your, your crop to tend to. And if you had wheat, you had to get it in. And if you wanted bedding for your animals, you had to bale the straw from the wheat and then the beans, And then and the growing season has changed some, too, because whenever we used to have to wait for the ground to freeze sometimes to get the corn out, where now they've changed, the genetics has changed the corn. It's a shorter season corn, so they can get it out earlier.
Mm-hmm. So you your corn, you'd plant when?
We'd plant it in the spring.
Mm-hmm. You'd harvest as late as what? October, November?
Sometimes December.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. My son was telling me, we were talking about harvesting crops one day, and I said, yeah, we didn't have a cab on our combine. We didn't have a cab on anything. And he said, you're kidding me. I said, no. I said, you're sitting out there in the bean dust and the wheat dust, and the corn ain't so bad. But the other side, I mean, we had everything used to be open. There was cabs on stuff. But that was a luxury.
But you had mechanized equipment.
Yeah, we had mechanized equipment. Yeah, we had a combine. Mm-hmm. We had a corn picker before we had the combine, but then we had a combine. So.
Did you own your equipment outright, or did you have to lease it?
No, we owned it. Mm-hmm. We farmed with older equipment. Mm-hmm. I think the one tractor was from 1950, another tractor was from 1960, and the combine was probably from 62. Mm-hmm. Because you buy it, you get it, and mm-hmm. then you just take care of it and fix it as you needed it. That's another thing. A farmer's a mechanic also. Some farmers are, some farmers aren't. Mm-hmm. I mean, It depends on the older equipment. You just, if you could, you'd repair it yourself. Some people couldn't, so mm-hmm. they'd have to hire it done.
Right. Is that part of where your love of machinery came from?
Yeah, I guess. I just like machinery and working with my hands and fixing stuff and stuff like that.
Were you in charge of repairing the equipment on the farm?
No, my dad did it most of the time. I mean, when I got older, I helped him, but then we were off the farm by the time I was 18, but I'd help him when I could, you know.
And you've been around for over 50 years now, so you've seen a lot of changes in technology and such. Looking back at your life, you know, and what technology you grew up with, do you think we're better off now?
In some ways I do, some ways I don't. Because if anything ever happens to this country, that the computers crash, everything's run by computers now. The printing press that I work on is run by a computer. Most of the time when it goes down, it's a computer glitch or a computer problem. Back when I was a kid, we had one phone in the house, and that's how, you know, we didn't have to be in constant contact with everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's good in some ways and not so good in others, mm-hmm. you know. But
do you think it's, you know, that kind of technology has helped increase a sense of, like, your community or folks, you know, folks know more people? Or do you think that back in the day where you had to be a little more interdependent and rely on your neighbors?
Oh, I'm sure that people know more people from being on the computer and that. I think that we're oversensitized because everybody tells everything they do now, which is not always a good thing. Things were more private when I was raised, you know. Mm-hmm. Things were more personal, and you didn't tell everybody everything, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why I don't think that... I think it's good in some ways and not good in others, but, mm-hmm. you know, That's a technology we live with right now, so yeah. We will see what happens with it.
You use technology yourself, right?
Yeah, I have a cell phone and a tablet. Yeah.
But you grew up in the era of, like, telephones and letter writing.
Right. Yeah. That's I would call when my wife lived in Pennsylvania, I called her and I wrote a letter. Mm-hmm. But that's what I did because I didn't call her very often because the phone long distance was high. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know.
So you write letters?
I wrote letters.
How long did you guys do that to you?
6 or 8 months.
Before you got married?
No, before we met.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you met through writing letters?
Yeah, we were pen pals. We met through a mutual friend, and then we started writing. Mm-hmm. We were pen pals for a while.
So you think that we're missing out on something by not using... My
bracelet technology? It's a slower time back when I was, you know. Everything's so fast now. Everything's instant. People want everything instant. And I just don't think that it's the greatest thing all the time. Our world moves pretty fast. Everything's in a hurry, so.
Is that always a bad thing? Is it?
Well, I mean, it just depends on what it is. I mean... You know, people lose their patience pretty fast anymore nowadays, and I think we need to have more patience and stay with the older values of things instead of everything being just, you know, just because I don't want to do this or that, I should be able to do it, you know. There's right and wrong in everything, and I feel like the computer... Internet and all that stuff, it's nice, I mean, but it's going to take us down a different road than what we're used to.
Mm-hmm. So do you think the next 50 years of Madison County are like anything like the 50 years you've been through so far?
Well, I think it's going to change quite a bit more, but it just, I mean, it may not change a lot. I mean, things are kind of leveled out now. I mean, you got to figure the past from 1900 to 2000. That 100 years was one of the most progressive years, you know, in technology and that. Mm. I mean, my grandpa was born in 1906 in Madison County. And he started farming with horses, and he went to, when he retired, he was farming, he was using one of the newest combines on the market. I mean, he went from horses to total mechanization with a cab and air conditioning and a radio, I mean. And that's the thing. I mean, things have, the cars and everything, everything's computer-based now, so we'll just see what happens and see what, you know, happens in the county and see how things go.
All right. So you've lived most of your life in the county. What mm-hmm. I think back to your childhood, your teenage years, and coming back as an adult from Pennsylvania. What do you think are some of the biggest changes to the county?
Oh, more modern roads. You know, the roads we used to live on were oil roads. Mm. Now them are all, most of them are concrete. Of course, higher taxes.
Are the roads worth the higher taxes?
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, they are. I mean, Illinois itself is not doing very good right now, which I don't know if it's misappropriation of funds or bad management or what it is, but I would say we need to change some things up there, but that's another story.
Well, Jeff, I just want to thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. It's a privilege to talk with you.